Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Like, I will never love a movie the way I love that film.
It's just, there's so much good to it. I think it's so well done. Welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about video game adaptations. Movies. They're like video games, except you've got no say in what happens or when. You're not the main character, Tom Cruise is. That's movies. The same could be said about TV shows, except they're sometimes shorter and there's more parts to them to get the point across. And this time it's not Tom Cruise, but it's probably Kiefer Sutherland. The relationship between video games and TV shows and movies, which I'm going to call shoovies as a collective before I start calling them the more contextually relevant thing, is a rather interesting one. I might be wrong, and I think it's brave of me to admit that, but I remember the noughties as a time where licensed video games were all the rage. You simply could not release a shoovie without there being a video game of it either on release or after. The Sopranos' Road to Respect was a notable release that confounded the masses, but you can't deny there was an audience desperate to know what it was like to be a mafia boss. Sadly, the game couldn't capture the true essence of being Italian-American, which was arguably its most fatal flaw.
Gabagool. Over here.
But alas, we're very much at a point now where the only licensed releases coming out are for children. My Little Pony games, Bluey games, Smurfs Kart, you name it. These are baby games, no video game for crime drama 24 in sight. Instead, we've flipped over. Video games are now doing their own thing, or doing their own thing two or three more times after release. So is the natural process. Big Hollywood studios are looking to video games for their ideas now that people are losing interest in watching 3 hours of Hawkeye's complex adventure to find roads in maritime New South Wales. But this didn't just start in the past few years. One could argue that it started in 1993 by the husband and wife team of Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel. Their movie? Super Mario Bros.
Oh yeah!
But Super Mario Bros. Technically wasn't the first video game adaptation to make it to the movies.
No!
Funnily enough, that crown was still taken by Mario.
Yahoo!
But instead in the form of the 1986 animated film Super Mario Bros. The Great Mission to Rescue Princess Peach. However, that was Japan exclusive. If we're talking about where it started in the West, it's Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo as the Mario Brothers. Sure, people look back on that film in horror due to some of the foul creatures that exist in it, but I think they're funny and cool, so that's the end of it. From there, the video game adaptation industry had nothing else to do but grow. Uwe Boll has stayed gamefully employed thanks to video game adaptations, which is either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on who you are as a person. There have been some greats in Werewolves Within and Detective Pikachu, and there have been some stinkers in Alone in the Dark and Street Fighter The Legend of Chun-Li. It's actually a huge gamble when it comes to whether or not a video game movie is going to be good. And then in the TV realm, video game adaptations seem to do better. The Last of Us, Twisted Metal, Arcane, and The Cuphead Show are all examples of video game adaptations that have been pretty well loved by fans and newcomers alike. The Halo and Resident Evil TV shows, on the other hand. Stinky! So what makes a good video game adaptation? With more in the works and on the release schedule, what's in store for the future of video game adaptations? What games should get movies or TV shows, and what games never really needed them? Joining me today to discuss all these questions and more is comedian, filmmaker, writer, podcaster, and fan of movies, Alexi Toliopoulos.
Wow, it's certainly true. I do simply adore cinema.
I've heard this, yes. And then that's why I asked you. I'm like, video game movies, there's so many of them. I saw one or more, and you know, I know so many people who love video games, but when it comes to the movie lovers in the world, I think, and I'm like, Alexi, my friend Alexi loves movies.
I'm one of the guys that loves movies most in this world.
I would say.
I adore cinema, I cherish movies, and it means a heck of a lot to me.
And what do you think it is about movies that you love so much?
I love sitting down. It's a big part of it.
Huge.
That's a huge part of why I love movies.
Do you think you could stand up and watch a movie and
I've
have
done
the same?
It. I've watched a movie in almost every way that you could possibly. Because I've got to keep it fresh somehow.
That's true. I say this a lot. Watching a movie isn't just watching a movie. It's also the experience you have while doing it.
Absolutely. That's beautifully put.
Yeah, thank you.
After all, cinema is the empathy machine. You go in and you feel things.
Big time, you
absolutely.
Know? And it's also about what you're doing in the process. Like if someone on screen's eating food and you're also eating food, you immediately feel like a connection to
exactly.
that person on
That's
screen.
That's the empathy, dude.
All right.
That's the empathy
That's
of cinema.
The empathy. Big time. And you know, video game movies, right? Back in the day, at least I feel,
yes,
there were a lot more bad video game adaptations than there were good ones.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because, like, I think I love the way you put it in your introduction, how there was a lot of like cross feeding between the two, where, you know, because I was a movie nerd growing up, so many of the games I played were like film adaptations, and I had no idea that they sucked. I was like, wow, video games are just pretty hard and I'm bad at them.
Damn.
but then, you know, because I was a video game lover and a film lover, I would be excited to see like this big video game film adaptations. I would have seen almost all the ones growing up in the cinema. Tomb Raider, Doom, in fact, was one of the first movies I remember seeing where I had the cognitive thought of, oh, I guess not all movies are good. So it was like, it's kind of an important movie in my life to just go, oh, okay, they're not all good.
Well, that's another thing. I feel like you don't know good movies until you've also known bad movies.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
I agree.
It's a huge thing. Like,
absolutely.
If you only saw good movies, which like I feel like is a privilege
yes.
in itself. I feel like if you've only seen good movies, how can you really know that they're that good? You got to see.
I would say
some
the
stinkers.
Same is the opposite as well. It's like if you only see bad movies, you know, you will never know something good.
Oh, yeah. And I had a very long time of, for fun and as jokes, only watching shitty movies because I thought, oh, it's fun. They're funny. It's funny to watch bad movies. And was only watching bad movies for quite a long, I think probably like 6 months.
Six
of just
months
only
is
watching
a long
bad
time to
movies.
Torture yourself.
And it really kind of messed with my view of movies.
Absolutely.
That when I did actually watch something good after a while, I was like, oh.
You feel satiated.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. It feels like, you know, after like a plane crash and you're in the woods for like 6 months, you're only eating nuts and berries. And then finally realizing that, you know, you were next to a 7-Eleven the whole time. And then you get one of those like chicken and lettuce sandwiches.
Wow.
And then you really experience something beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. I guess so.
Is it like that?
It's probably something like
it's
that.
It's probably something like that. But yeah, like what do you think has changed in terms of like the approach to how people make video game adaptations?
I think that's a really interesting question because I don't think it's a straight answer. I think maybe for me, what I'm guessing is like the biggest factor is now there's a generation of filmmakers that have grown up with video games, and that is part of their artistic progression in their life. Like people that are our age make movies now, and they have had video games being as equal an art form for them growing up, or as equal a form of expression, creativity, storytelling, a form of interactive storytelling that is as key to them as film, TV, you know, paintings, music, as key to those. So I think there's like a more inherent appreciation and respect for the form. And then through that, the other key, I think probably the most key factor is now having some kind of an understanding of how to adapt them. Mm. Like if you look back at the Super Mario Brothers movie with John Leguizamo, Johnny Legs, and Bob Hoskins, what, like, it's a crazy movie.
I think it rocks.
Because they have no idea how to adapt it. You go like, how do you adapt this side scroller where it's a little guy in overalls jumping around? Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Let's make it look like Blade Runner and it's set in another world that's called Dino New York or whatever.
And I think they had this point of Donna being Hatton, like.
Sorry, I know I have to correct myself.
No, it's okay. It's okay. But I think there was also this like idea of like making it, because like it was kind of like a gritty remake, right? Mm. But as well, like, there was probably some guy working on that who kind of like sat back and he's like, well, if you think about what a Goomba would look like in real life, it'd actually be really yuck.
Yeah. And then like, went it would be disgusting. It would stink. It would have to be like a tiny head on top of a huge body. Like all of that. It's such a whack way to adapt something. But back then it's like, what did they have? They had like a few pictures and some sounds. And like some lore written down in a manual, basically.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you even adapt that? I think as the storytelling and artistry of video games has grown, there's more apparent ways how to adapt them. Like you just go, oh, there's a storyline here. Let's do that. And not just that. For me, a lot of the best video game adaptations in the modern era, probably the last 10 years or so, I think there's an inherent understanding of not just like adapting the video game and not just seeing video game movies as a genre, but then going, okay, what is the genre study we can apply to this? Because audiences are really fluent in the language of genre, whether they are aware of or not, So it's a really great way to communicate to audiences by going, okay, Pikachu, we want to make a Pokemon movie. Okay, well, we can't just adapt this thing where it's a guy goes to like 10 gyms to battle all these. Like, well, that's not a movie. But they go, well, Detective Pikachu, it's another little spin-off in there.
Yeah.
That can be easily go, well, why don't we make it like a neon noir? Like, take the world. There's a great world in Pokemon. Use that to build a noir story, a detective story in there, and just really excel at communicating through the genre of noir and detective storytelling and crime thriller storytelling. Mm. I think to me, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead. To me, that's the best video game movie.
You're a big Detective Pikachu head.
I adore Detective Pikachu. I think I saw like 3 times in the cinema. Yeah, I've definitely seen it 3 or 4 times on the 4K UHD Blu-ray that I got. Yeah. And yes, it is the Steelbook edition.
Of course.
And
of
I would say it's probably like in my top 5 blockbusters of like the last 10 years.
I would say that's fair. I really, really loved that movie as well. I think it did, for me at least, did everything right when it came to a video game adaptation without trying to do the most.
Yes, I agree.
It didn't feel forced.
It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like a compromise the way that many of the other ones do. We're like, oh, we've got to put this in for the fans. We've got to show them this thing so they can like tap that little part in their brain and goes, oh, I like to see that, which I think is, for me, a big problem across all blockbuster filmmaking now, which is all about like hitting that endorphin of like going, oh, I recognize this thing. I do that. Oh, yeah. I love that. Little shock in your pleasure system or something.
Pointing because you know something. It's very that.
And of course, like that's in there. Like it's not like you go, oh, wow, Mr. Mime, what a great character. But I think it utilizes those things and communicates to the audience through genre in a really interesting way. And a very satisfying way.
I think they did the point at the screen and right in the sense of the Pokemon.
The Pokemon's there. Yeah.
Just purely in the sense of, you know, you'd see these like shots going in between like pivotal scenes, right? Where they'd just be like going across an environment and you'd see a Pokemon in its natural habitat. And it wasn't push in your face. It wasn't like, look, it's Bulbasaur. But instead it was just like, of course a Bulbasaur is there. We're in the forest.
Exactly.
And I think that was done really well because it was just showing that like they're a normal part of this world rather than like it's this huge big deal.
And it integrates it all as world building in, I think, a very successful way.
Yeah.
And I think there are others that do that kind of thing as well now. So like, I think video game adaptations are a big part of blockbuster filmmaking's future. And I think that now we're seeing more interesting ways of how to adapt them, more interesting ways to use that world building for world building within the film instead of just going like, oh, we have to exactly interpret this thing.
Yeah. Well, that was actually where I was going to go with the next question, was kind of just talking about like the trend of video game movies and where do you think it's going? Because I feel like every, let's say, 5 years or so, maybe even three to kind of like tighten it. Every 3 years, it's like a different trend of movies. There's the superhero movies. Yep. There was the vampire movies. There was like the teen comedies that really shone. I feel like now we're moving into an age of video game movies and video game adaptations kind of taking over like the big Hollywood areas. Would you agree?
I would agree, yes. I think the way you're talking about it is like these ideas of movements and cycles in film where it's like you'll be able to clearly point that something's happening. And we've been in a really long extended cycle of the top tier of blockbuster filmmaking being like a superhero genre. And I would say that I think for a large part of the mainstream audience, we've kind of reached, we've been on a plateau for a while. And I think we have started to see that sort of waft off down a little bit where the key mainstream audience is probably just a little bit sick of it. And I think it's like a really big trend. And I think video games are going to be part of this trend in the future of what the next cycle will be. And the way that I've kind of identified it is right now when you look at like what the year in box office looks like and the cultural conversation around cinema right now, it's obviously Mario is a big movie, but the main conversations we've seen this year are around Barbie and Oppenheimer. Yeah. And I think both of those actually show for a good example of what I think could happen with video game adaptations in that what they are both something familiar. Oppenheimer being like a big prestigious biographical film and Barbie being, you know, an IP, a property that is somewhat familiar. But then you see it's kind of like a bold vision or a new twist on something that people are already familiar with, which is what I think is getting people in the cinema. They go, oh, it's something I know, but there's something new about it. There's something fresh, there's something exciting. And I think that is probably the key to what will make this next generation of video game films work. Like, you know, we've just seen announcement of The Legend of Zelda having a feature film adaptation by, I don't know the filmmaker's name, but a filmmaker that did the Maze Runner movies.
Yeah.
And I think that depending on the direction of where that goes, I don't know if it's live action or if it's going to be animation or what. I presume it's live action because it's a live action filmmaker, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think that will be a key to that because I think it will be, oh, it's Zelda, but what's the twist? Like, what are we going to see? Is it going to be a straight adaptation? It's hard to adapt that straightly. So it's like, well, what are you going to do? And so it's kind of like the familiarity for people in the video game audience will be like, oh, it's Zelda. But the twist is I'm seeing it on a big screen and there's going to be some kind of, there'll be some kind of bold vision towards it, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Or it'll be the mainstream audience, which is, well, I love fantasy movies with swords and creatures like Lord of the Rings. And the twist is it's probably maybe a little bit more family friendly than something like that, or a little bit more of that striking Zelda vision where it is like the character, like the way that they design, or the design of Zelda, I think is so aesthetically beautiful that I think that could provide the new twist for mainstream audience too.
And I think that's a really interesting thing, Zelda specifically, because I remember, and I don't know if anybody else, I mean, like obviously someone else would have probably felt this because there's no such thing as an original thought, but with the Mario movie, for example, Mario doesn't really have lore. There's not really story timelines that exist with Mario. It's kind of just like, there are known characters in Mario and things have happened around Mario that aren't really quote unquote canon. It's kind of just like activities, events, right? But Mario doesn't really have like a direct storyline like The Legend of Zelda has in so many different ways, right? So when the Mario movie came along, everybody was like, what are they going to do? What story is there other than Princess Peach gets kidnapped and Mario has to save her? And when I first thought of it, I was like, maybe they'll go in a completely different direction a la Super Mario Sunshine and have him in a completely different area where he's doing different shit. Who knows? Maybe more like Mario RPG or Paper Mario. Like, just there are other Mario worlds that have had more concrete stories and storylines than your average Mario, but I don't know if they'd be quote-unquote canon.
Yeah.
Whatever, right?
Almost taking like the Detective Pikachu route.
Right? Like a little spin-off. I think that'd be fantastic. The Mario movie that came out, we'll talk about that in a moment. But with Zelda, there's a whole Hyrule timeline that breaks off into a million different pieces because they can't choose a single story of Zelda.
It's like, sort of continuing. It's sort of continuum.
No.
But there are those connections that make it a continuum.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there's what if Link didn't beat Ganondorf?
Yes.
What if Link did? Mm-hmm. What if Ganondorf won, but in this way or in this way? Or like what if this thing happened, but also Hyrule got flooded and it's not Hyrule anymore? Like what if this and it's this Termina. And this happened? It's Termina. Like, yeah, exactly. It's like what if, right? Yeah. The Zelda series is just a whole thing of what if this happened, right? So when it comes to the live action one, it's very interesting because it's got a whole different situation to Mario.
Yes.
Where it's not a case of there's not enough to go off.
Mm.
It's the case of there's too much to go off. Which one are they going to go for?
Exactly. Because it's kind of like, oh, well, it would be great to do a straight adaptation of Majora's Mask or something because it's such a wonderful story world. It's got a great conceit to it. And it's kind of contained, which is something that I think could play well for a movie. But then you're like, well, I have to introduce the whole world to Zelda. Do I just do Ocarina of Time and have to create some interesting story elements? Because it's a vast story, but it's also quite sparse.
Yeah.
Like there's not too much to it in a kind of like depth way that I think is necessary for a movie to present you. So it's kind of like that's the one that I'm most fascinated by because I think that there is huge potential to bring the aesthetic of that world to a cinematic space wonderfully. But it's just kind of like, well, what is the story? What do you have to find? Is it just going to be a typical fantasy thing?
Mm.
Or are you going to use, I think they, in all of those films and the example that you laid out, they are doing very interesting things with storytelling and very interesting things with like how to involve the player. And even thinking about the two contrasts of Mario and Link or the characters from Zelda, I think because Zelda, it is that RPG, and I think there's a lot of potential in taking those RPG storylines and story worlds and adapting them to cinema, that there's a positive and a negative to them. One of the positives is that there's almost a strong characterization because it's all about the empathy of putting yourself in that character. And so there is a lot in there of like going like, well, how do I adapt that? It's difficult, but I think it is really possible. But Link is also kind of like a little bit of that blank character.
So that's exactly
it. You put a lot of it onto yourself. A lot of it on yourself.
Silent protagonist.
Exactly.
And I feel like that's, there's been silent protagonists in video games for however long, right? And the point of that is for the player to be able to put themselves in their shoes. The silent protagonist doesn't say anything. They don't impose their thoughts and opinions on a situation. They just do shit.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
They just are in a situation.
And it's you controlling them. So it's just like, what's the motivation? It's you, mate. You're the motivation.
You're the motivation. So like, it'll be very interesting to see how they work with the son. I think it would be interesting to see how they'd go with making Link not talk at all in the movie.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
I think that'd be awesome. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it was a good movie. I didn't enjoy it. But there was a movie that came out really recently, a horror movie where there was no talking whatsoever. I forgot what it was called. But had the girl from Booksmart and it was...
Oh, yeah. I've not seen it, but I know the
You know
one.
What
yes,
I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yeah.
I'll remember. And you know what? I'll edit me saying the
it's
movie.
It's called like You Left Me Alone or something
like
that.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. No one will save you. And I didn't care for it, but it showed that like you could have an hour and 20 minutes of no talking whatsoever, except for like a few things being said here and there, right? Like tiny, tiny little phrases by other characters. But I think it would be interesting to see a silent protagonist. They managed to do it in Breath of the Wild and they managed to do it in Tears of the Kingdom with other characters talking.
Exactly.
Everybody else was talking. Link wasn't.
Yeah.
He was still like zip your lips like a padlock, but everybody else was talking. So I'd be interested to see if they could kind of get away with that.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting. I do believe, if I had to guess, they would definitely be experimenting with it on a script level or some way. Just going like, well, what can we do? It might not come to fruition in that way, but you'd be crazy not to think about it.
Right? I feel like it'd be a cool thing to work with, honestly. And also like if they are going to have someone play Link, I would love for them to go for like the Philips CDI type, like, excuse me, princess, like very tongue-in-cheek. I think if he's going to talk, he's got to be an idiot.
He's got to be annoying.
He's got to be goofy and annoying. Yeah. He's got to suck. I love main characters who suck. I think they're great.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I think as well, on the other flip of that is like, is Link a more compelling character than Mario? Because it's like Mario, I don't even know. Mario, he has the shape of a personality, but I don't think he actually has a personality. He's kind of just like, the voice is quite animated and lovely, especially, you know, the Charles Martinet that we think
the
of
Charles
Mario
Martinet voice.
Yes, not talking about Chris Pratt here. But I don't know. It's always like, well, how did they do that? I think they made an interesting effort with the Mario movie. I think especially aesthetically, it's stunning. It looks so beautiful.
It's visually beautiful.
It's a feast. Delightful. It looks so bright and colorful. It's like to put a little kid in front of that for 92 minutes. It's like a dream come true.
Absolutely.
It looks beautiful.
Like, I have somewhat strong opinions when it comes to how movies look now.
Yes.
I hate the grayscale. I don't like this whole, like, we're making things look, quote unquote, more realistic because I like going to a movie and seeing it just look vibrant, right? I already walk through the, you know, through my day-to-day and see a very normal looking world. And if it calls for it, fair enough. But if you're going for like quote unquote realism and that just means making your movie look kind of brown, I think it's boring. I think it's very boring.
I agree, but only to the extent that I hate boring looking films.
Yeah.
So if they utilize that to create like a personality to the way a film looks, I will love it.
Yeah.
But and I think Mario does, the look of the film does have a personality.
Absolutely.
It captures the brightness that you, as a person, you associate with every aspect of Nintendo. Like, you associate that brightness, that color, that like an imaginative aesthetic.
It's fun.
It's fun, and it translates really beautifully to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to make a movie visually fun.
Yes.
Like, that's,
I agree.
That's a weird descriptor, but it works, you know, for Mario specifically. Mario is an interesting one, I think, because I wouldn't say that the Mario movie was my favorite video game adaptation. It's just, I simply wouldn't say that.
I mean,
that.
Why would you? You can't lie.
I can't lie.
Yeah, as if it would be.
I live to tell the truth, you know? And but that doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy it. I thought it was a really fun movie. I thought it was visually very exciting. And I thought they did a good job with the fact that Mario doesn't really have a concrete story. And I thought leaning into the, you know, he's a, you know, Brooklyn-based Italian plumber. Fun, you know, still kind of leaning into the cheese that came with the original Super Mario Bros. Movie, but, you know, making it fine for children that won't scar them.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a really good job of that. But when it came to like a fully fleshed out plot, I think it, you know, it failed, but it's for kids.
Yeah.
It's a family movie.
Exactly.
Right?
It's for kids. So how much can I criticize it? But I would say this. I think kids deserve really good entertainment.
Totally.
So I think that they deserve something better than what they received with this.
Yeah.
But it's also like, oh, but kids want to see things that they like. So how can you adapt it? Well, they could have tried harder. I mean, tried harder. I mean, they executed something at a really high level with it. It looks so beautiful. It's involving. I can see kids really enjoying it. But there's just stuff in it that, like, I mean, my eyes loved watching it, but almost every other aspect of me did not enjoy watching it.
Oh, yeah. I loved seeing things in the movie.
But
it kind of felt like it felt like a Cocomelon type situation, but with a bigger budget.
Exactly.
You know?
Beautiful. But I'm a 30-year-old guy. I'm like, what am I going to get out of watching this anyway? It's like, so it's not for me, but and they're not for grown-ups like that movie. It's not for a grown-up. It's for kids. But I think kids deserve really, really good, high-quality entertainment. And there are aspects of this movie that deliver on that, but not completely so.
I would argue, because I really like the Sonic the Hedgehog movies, sans the human parts.
Yeah.
I think they're really boring. I think James Marsden, I think he's a delight.
He's a lovely guy.
He's a lovely guy. I wouldn't agree that Sonic the Hedgehog would be friends with a cop just because, like, knowing his history, that wasn't realistic to me.
That first movie's crazy. That's what I don't understand. How do you go, well, let's make Sonic and go, okay, well, he comes into the real world. Okay, one, that's the worst. That's crazy
crazy.
Do that decision.
But to be like, and he's also friends with a cop. Like, if you've played.
And then going to San Francisco for some reason.
Insane.
That's the journey of the film.
Insane. That being said.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I really enjoyed the Sonic movie.
I've only seen the first one and I thought it was shit, so I didn't watch
it. I really enjoyed it. I had fun. The second one I really liked. I didn't care for the wedding scenes, which were the—
Wait, what?
Okay.
Who gets married? Sonic?
No, James Marsden.
To Sonic? Okay, I'm watching this movie.
Hold on.
Okay, you sold me, mate.
Okay, James Marsden marrying Sonic. I wish. I think that'd make it—
I'm sure someone has written that script.
Someone has absolutely done that. Let's get on AO3. And figure it out. But no, so James Marsden's marrying his human wife.
Wow.
I hate that I have to—
Okay, yes.
Really put that down. Mm-hmm. His human wife. And that's like half of the movie, or maybe a third of the movie. Wow. The other part of the movie is Sonic getting the Chaos Emeralds, right? We know about the Chaos Emeralds.
This is a crazy matchup. Yeah.
Hold on. You know about the Chaos Emeralds, right?
Maybe when I was a kid, I remember.
So the Chaos Emeralds are the emeralds that Sonic collects to, you know, become all powerful, mm-hmm. right? It's wow. a big part
it's
of
like
the—
Thanos in that regard.
Kind of.
Okay.
I would— I don't know much about comics, so I can't say that Sonic did it first. But because it would be funny to me, mm-hmm. I would argue that Sonic did it first and that Marvel copied them. So Chaos Emeralds, right? Mm-hmm. Canonically, in the Sonic Bible, the Chaos Emeralds are created from every yucky thought
what
that has ever
hell?
Been had in the world.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And they are amassed into these crystals, which is so strange.
This is bizarre.
And
is that what it is in the movie as well?
No.
Okay.
Oh, maybe.
Okay, interesting.
I might be misremembering. Maybe it is. However, so with the Chaos Emeralds, that's like a huge part of the second movie. And in the second movie, other than the wedding scenes, like the storyline of that movie very much moved along like an average mm-hmm. 3D Sonic game would. There's a start, then characters go to different areas, like biomes even, for different goals. And then there's a semi-conclusion, of course, so then they can make another movie. It felt like watching a video game, if that makes sense. Like as much as a video game adaptation can feel like watching a video game, I would argue that Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was that for me, right? So what do you think of that as kind of a way to tell a video game story in a film? And have you maybe like even seen the video game setup happen in films outside of the video game adaptation world?
Yes, and I'm seeing it more and more.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's really interesting because you're, like we said at the start of this conversation, you're seeing these filmmakers that grew up with video games as a really important form of storytelling. Mm. And now you're seeing that translate to films that aren't even directly video game films. I think the big example is the Doug Liman, Tom Cruise, Edge of Tomorrow, where you really do see progress and leveling up. You see the repetition that one experiences when you play a video game, you're constantly dying. So you're like, well, I got to do that again, figure out how to do that. And I think that's a really great and strong adaptation of the feeling of playing a video game, but turning that into a cinematic experience, not just like a direct experience. Going like, okay, how do we do that? How do we meld these two forms together to give you the experience of playing a video game? And I think that's a really key example where it's a really great, fantastic action adventure movie as well. On the other end of the spectrum, because that's a big blockbuster film, on the completely other end of the spectrum is I saw this film at a Sydney Underground Film Festival this year called Hundreds of Beavers. And it is one of my favorite things I've seen all year. It's absolutely a fascinating experience because it is taking two forms from the end of each end of the timeline of cinema and melding them together, where it is simultaneously completely inspired and looks like silent era comedy. This is a dialogue-free movie. It's all silent era filmmaking look. It looks like an old black and white Charlie Chaplin, more so Buster Keaton kind of film, but then taking also then elements of like the Tex Avery, Looney Tunes, cartoons. But the structure of this film it feels like a video game. It feels like a 2-hour, like, let's play watch of someone playing this video game, where the other big, I would say, influence is probably something like Legend of Zelda or even something like that, where you're watching this movie about a frontiersman who's out in the wild. It's very funny. It looks like a cartoon as well. And you're seeing him have to collect all these beaver furs or animal pelts and stuff like that. And each of these animals that he hunts are played by a man in a mascot-like suit. So there's a lot of charm to it like that. But then his whole mission is to earn 100 beaver pelts so he can marry the shopkeeper's daughter. And so you see him using all these traps, and it's the progression of learning how to be a better hunter and like all these like different setups of things that he can do. And then by the end of it, you're seeing like, oh, this guy's farming things now. Like he's just absolutely farming all these like equipments that he needs for everything.
Yeah.
And so it's like a really interesting progress, because this is not like a movie that I think is even aimed at a video game audience. I think a video game audience will find it eventually when it comes out in cinemas, probably more so likely next year. But it's like, it's a really fascinating thing, because it's like this tiny, small, independent comedy that's utilizing these storytelling techniques that are innate in another form of media. And it's so satisfying. I could have watched it for like 4 hours, this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how, I never say that about anything. But it's just like I could go for 4 hours and just enjoy the repetition of it all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like another thing you could do is like open like a Legend of Zelda Let's Play and then just kind of like put your display on your computer to black and white.
I might do that.
And then just turn the sound off.
And just soak it all in.
Soak it all in.
Soak it all in. I'm even start lying down, not just sitting down while watching
it. Oh my God. Well, you've seen the, I think Lenovo is releasing these glasses that have your computer screen in the glasses.
Wow.
So you can just lie down and watch your computer.
You can never escape the computer screen.
No.
Oh,
never.
My Lord.
I mean, Google Glass, is that still around?
No, I don't think it ever really caught on.
No.
Because it was like you could get a little bit of a screen popping into your real world. It's so weird.
And I think people started seeing other people wearing Google Glass and going, what a loser.
He's a dork over here.
Yeah.
I'm tempted. I would love Google Glass so I can always watch a movie. We've got something going on.
Yeah, but I mean, that's great and all. But I feel like in the kind of world that we're living in right now with, you know, like you can watch an entire movie on TikTok with like Subway Surfers happening under it.
Oh boy.
I feel like that's bad for our brains, right? Yeah.
But you know, I could be seeing every single movie of all time. I've got a bit of shot if I've got a movie constantly going on my left eye.
You are a movie appreciator, you know? You could be always watching a movie.
My dream. That would be my dream.
That's your dream?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I think my dream is to like have $1 trillion.
Well, how am I going to get that $1 trillion? I think it's by being the world's biggest movie nerd.
Yeah, like always watch it, having seen every movie, right?
It's like, that's the guy we go to.
Yeah.
They can ask me any question about any film, and if I'm not brain dead, I will answer them.
Yeah, and if you like kind of have enough of a memory about that, because like you might just be doing something a little more important
at that point.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be bad for it, but also very good.
Yeah, career-wise.
And I mean like, okay, so with video game adaptations, you know, and with going back to like superhero movies and stuff, I feel like with superhero movies, with Marvel, let's say Marvel movies in particular, it wasn't just comic book fans seeing those films. It was people who've maybe never read Marvel or DC, whatever, comic book, seeing these movies and being able to enjoy them, right? And that's fine. You know, there's freaks who are like, you don't even know what happened to Spider-Man in this issue and how it doesn't even relate to the movie. And it's like, well, me no care.
Yeah.
I don't care. Shut up.
Yeah. Why would you?
Why would I do that? Why would I read when I can watch, you know? There's mass appeal for superhero movies in both the comic book fan world and also the movie enjoyer world. Because I feel like superheroes just in general kind of have that appeal. You know, what if a person had freaking powers?
Yeah.
That's exciting to most people, right? With video game adaptations, do you think, how much do you think the love or hate for a video game adaptation is linked to the way that people feel about the source material? Do you think it's similar to superhero movies, or do you think that there's kind of a difference maybe based on the fact that you actively choose what happens in a game?
I think that's a really interesting question, because I think that for me, there have been very few examples where I have preferred the film over the video game.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I would say Detective Pikachu is the only one.
The Detective Pikachu games?
I've never played them.
They're
And I like the
slow.
Movie more than I've ever liked any. I've loved Pokemon my whole life. Well, I don't know, probably first 15 years of my life maybe, if I'm being really honest.
Yeah.
But then that movie, it's like, yeah, great translation of it. Every single other one, and I'm even going to include a big one that I think people hold up as the great video game adaptation, The Last of Us.
Yeah.
I think the video game is far more successful in Absolutely. Every aspect. And I'm talking at large from Tomb Raider to Uncharted to Mario. I think all of them. I don't think there's a single one as far as big ones go. I know there's like, there's this werewolf movie that I know.
Werewolves Within.
Yeah, Werewolves Within.
It's a very interesting one because it is the top rated video game adaptation on Rotten Tomatoes, which like, you know, is whatever, but like that's the facts. Like it is the top rated one when it comes to both critics' consensus and audience, right? But as a video game, it was a VR, 2016 small VR game that I hadn't even heard of.
Yes.
Until quite recently.
I've never even seen a screenshot of the game.
Nah, me neither. And the movie is pretty like widely accepted as a great movie on its own.
Yeah, it's a horror comedy from what I gather. Yeah. I've yet to see that, but I would say that like that element in all of these movies that are even like in the case of The Last of Us, a direct adaptation of the game.
Mm.
And it's a game that is just bursting with story and personality. And it's unique. It's a unique telling of something that's quite familiar to us in like the tropes of a zombie apocalyptic type storyline.
Mm.
But it's taking fresh ideas to it. I don't think for me any of the adaptations have been better, been more enjoyable, been more interesting, fascinating as the video games. And it's how can they be? Like, because in the video game, it's an active experience.
Yeah.
It's not a passive experience the way that often, for the most part, movies are a passive experience. You're watching something happen. In video games, you're in charge of every decision, like whether it be from a big role-playing game where you actually actively have to make choices, or just the choice and decision of I'm going to move left, I'm going to move right, I'm going to go back to this room. You're so in charge of the experience, and a lot of the character comes to your connection to the character, how you feel about the character. That can be same for movies too, but it's not as direct as that.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really big hurdle because there are some things that work in video games that don't work in film or TV series. I think The Last of Us, it's very well made. And they've made some really fantastic and interesting decisions of how to adapt that. Personally, I prefer the storytelling in the game than the TV series. But it's a really fascinating thing to look at because you're just going like, well, how do they bridge those gaps? Because a lot of the game and the story unfolds while playing, not just through cutscenes. They can't just go, well, let's just turn all the cutscenes into script and then pop it out. But it's like, okay, well, what about the connective tissue? You can't just go, okay, well, this happens. And then we've got a cut and we go, here's the next thing that happens. I think it's a very interesting adaptation. And I've liked seeing how much people have really loved it. And hopefully it's brought people back to the video game as well. And I'm very interested to see how they'll adapt to Last of Us Part 2, because I think that is one of the, for me, it's one of the greatest video games of all time, The Last of Us Part 2. And I think it's one of the greatest uses of storytelling ever in a video game from a narrative sense of like how to give you the interesting, I don't even know if satisfying feeling, but the narrative satisfaction of a storyline through a non-linear experience as well. Like the experiencing a story non-linearly to still give you the feeling of a perfectly executed story.
Yeah.
And so I'm like very interested to see how they're going to even adapt that. So I don't know. I think it's not my favorite, but it's rightfully a high watermark of video game adaptations.
I think when it comes to The Last of Us Part 2 in particular, I fear for whoever plays Abby, honestly, because that, even the voice actress in the game was just harassed to an
crazy,
ungodly extent for being a character, which is insane to me.
I would say, I think the tough thing is because it's a lot of the same audiences.
Yeah.
So they will still be feeling that.
Yeah.
But you don't often see in film and TV you see some of that, but not to that extent. And I think it's because of what we're talking about, the connection to the character. In video game, that's you. That's literally you. How can you not care about that person?
Yeah.
So you see these people that have these hyperbolized emotions around them and take things so personally. You don't often see that in film with audiences.
The only one I could pull it to is like how people feel about Skyler White in Breaking Bad, which I still don't understand to this day.
Which is misogyny, basically.
It is. It's misogyny. Really is. Yeah. She was reasonable for the entire time, easily. But that's a whole other conversation, right? So the last video game movie you saw was Mario.
Was Mario. I watched it days ago.
And days ago. Mm-hmm. So you've got a fresh perspective on it.
I guess so.
Right? Yeah. How do you feel about kind of the movie as a whole, especially when it comes to the characterization of the characters?
It's pretty interesting because they don't really have anything to go from apart from like, oh, he's got an established look and a backstory. But when we say backstory, he's Italian and he's a plumber.
Yeah.
That's kind of it.
And he works with his brother.
He's got a brother.
He's got a brother. Yeah.
I think they did a pretty funny job of adapting those things, especially when we're in the real world of Brooklyn. And you're like, okay, these guys. The one thing that I really appreciated was like, how they explain like what their costumes are as if it's like a gimmick for who they are. I actually found that to be charming.
I loved the ad. I loved the Mario loved the rap. Ad. I thought that was just, I think that was, and there's a lot of delightful stuff in that movie. I think that was one of the most delightful parts. Like I thought it was just so cute. Mm. Right. And I think a lot of this movie is just very cute.
And I think Jack Black as Bowser, there's moments of genius there.
Oh, yeah.
There's some genius going on there.
Who else was going to do it like that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You have to make a weird choice. You would have to go, let's do something weird.
Well, that's the thing because they're pretty much all these characters are blank slates.
Mm.
You can kind of do anything with them. And making Bowser pathetic, like a bit of a loser, I thought, and this is like for me, this is my deep Mario lore, is like making Bowser a bit of a loser, a bit pathetic, a bit, you know, in love, but unlucky in love, is very much related to how his character was in the Paper Mario series.
Yep.
Because in the Paper Mario series, you obviously play as Mario, play as his friends, but then every now and then the story takes you over to whatever Bowser's doing.
Mm.
And usually it's funny. It's like the comic relief of those games. And he's kind of pathetic. And to see that in the Mario movie, I honestly think was the best that they could do with it.
Yeah.
Like the most accurate representation of what's supposed to be a scary fire-breathing turtle guy actually just being kind of goofy.
Mm.
Perfect. Great for kids. Great for adults. I think that was like some of the best like from scratch characterization they could have done. And nobody else could have done it but Jack Black, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they would have to pick someone really weird.
Yeah.
Like they would have to make a choice. But Jack Black, I think it's fantastic. It's really fun.
How do you feel about Chris Pratt as Mario?
When it was announced, I was, I don't know how, because it's like, I thought it was an awful decision.
I thought it was a joke at first.
I thought it was just an awful decision because it's just like, I think they should cast an Italian guy.
Yeah.
I actually really think that they should have cast an Italian actor.
I think they should have cast somebody older.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought he was too young. Mm-hmm. And like in my eyes, at least, Mario's like,
he's got a mustache.
He's got a mustache. He's kind of like dumpy, you know?
Exactly. I can get freaking Michael Imperioli as one of the Mario brothers, you know?
Yeah. Like,
something like that.
Even bring Bob Hoskins back.
Well, he's
like,
dead,
from the dead.
Yeah, okay. I would appreciate that.
From the dead.
He's one of my hero actors, my favorite actors of all time.
One of my favorite movies of all time?
Mm-hmm.
You want to guess? Bob Hoskins flick.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That's correct.
That's why I love Detective Pikachu. I think the same movie, you know?
It gave so much of that.
I love Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
So much. I'm a big fan of a good 2D, 3D crossover, which is why I am so desperate for, what is it, Coyote versus Acme?
Yeah.
To get a proper release.
I hope so.
I think that they're selling it around, fingers crossed.
And I would say, I've gone on the record to say this many times, I think Bob Hoskins in Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the greatest screen acting performance.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. I think it's one of the hardest ones, and it's one of the greats.
He managed to still pull off like an accurate neo-noir performance, despite it being Who Framed Roger Rabbit, being a funny rabbit guy and his sexy wife.
Yes, like, exactly.
I love everything about that movie.
Me too.
Hands down, 10 out of 10 perfect film.
I agree.
With, you know, Detective Pikachu, there was a lot of that, right?
Yes.
And, but yeah, I think Bob Hoskins, bring him back, pull him out.
Exactly.
Pull him out, zap him.
What if it was, okay, you got Joe Pesci as Mario, and you've got, or Joe Pantoliano, any Joey P basically doing it.
Oh, I love a bit of Joey P.
But I think, you know, even like Harvey Keitel and Michael Imperioli or something like that, John Turturro.
A lot of people said Danny DeVito. My only problem. Oh, wow,
that's a bit perfect.
My only problem with Danny DeVito. My only problem.
Too sexy.
He's just too much of a heartthrob. I mean, yes, but also, and maybe Always Sunny has just kind of like tainted it for me, but he's got a little too much stank on him. I feel like he'd be better as like one of.
He would have been a great Bowser.
Yeah. He would have been a great one of Bowser's like main cronies.
Yeah.
Or even a family member of Mario, because you see Mario and Luigi's whole family.
Yeah.
At the start of the film, which I once again think was a great idea. I think just having Mario and Luigi, like, it's kind of sad. There was the Super Mario Brothers show, like the animated show in the 80s, 90s. And that introduced like Papa Mario, Mama Mario. And they were like these side characters, but they existed. And that's fun.
Yeah.
A Mario family tree, delightful.
Yeah.
Having Mario and Luigi have siblings who are doing better than them, funny, silly, goofy. It's fun. And I think Danny DeVito, I think get literally the entire living cast of The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Get to them be all in their family.
Yeah, get Jason Schwartzman or something, you know? That would be cool.
Charlie Day as Luigi. I couldn't get a proper read on it because there wasn't enough Luigi in the movie.
It's true, there wasn't enough Luigi. Give Luigi a movie, I reckon.
I agree. Luigi's mentioned the movie.
Absolutely. It writes itself, it's done.
It's done. That was fun. Fun fact about Luigi's Mansion as a game. Originally it was gonna be Mario's Mansion. Like Mario was gonna be the main character.
It's wrong.
The problem was Mario had already been solidified as a hero. So if they put him in a haunted mansion and had him scared of the ghouly ghosts, bad. He'd be, you know, branded as a loser. They couldn't have Mario do that. He's already a hero. So they went, we have nothing on Luigi yet. Luigi does not have a character personality yet. Let's make him a coward.
Yeah.
Let's make him so scared and put him in the haunted mansion. And that's where Luigi's Mansion came.
Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah. So like him being a bit of a scaredy cat in the Mario movie, I think worked, but I didn't see enough.
Yeah. But you know, I think they'll probably make a Luigi's Mansion movie.
Sure.
We'll get there. They'll make all of them now that the dam has busted.
Exactly. And so so that was the most recent video game movie that you saw.
Yes.
So your favorite's probably Detective Pikachu.
Without a doubt. Sure. And I can't imagine it will ever change. Like I will never love a movie the way I love that film.
It's just there's so much good to it. I think it's so well done.
Yeah.
I think my only critique, you know, spoiler warning for Detective Pikachu. Mm-hmm. It's not even a critique. Spoiler warning for Detective Pikachu, but you probably should have seen it by now, is Pikachu being his dad, I thought was really funny.
Yeah, it's cute. I don't mind that at all. I think it's so cute. I saw it, and we viewed it on my podcast, Total Reboot, ages ago. I went with my friends Sam Campbell and Tom Walker, comedians, and it was just one of the best viewing experiences of my life.
I was about to say, if you're going to see a movie like Detective Pikachu with anybody, the fact that you saw it with Sam Campbell and Tom Walker would have been an experience.
It was a dream come true, and it was so funny because we made fun of Tom Walker, who's a mime comedian, when Mr. Mime was on screen. It's like, mate, that's your idol. Or
man.
Didn't that guy train you? We're like laughing about it. At the end of the movie when the credits came up, Mr. Mime was literally played by one of his mentors.
No way.
The body of it and everything did the movement. And we lost our minds. That's
That rocks.
Yeah.
So great film. Great film. I saw Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay, Five Nights at Freddy's.
You haven't seen it yet.
I've not seen it yet. I'm mildly curious about it because it's an interesting premise. And I had my little nephew when he was like 7 years old, he was obsessed with Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah.
Like for my Christmas present that year, he like drew me all these pictures of Five Nights at Freddy's characters. I'm like, okay, great. Cool, I'll keep this forever, I guess. He also drew Pennywise. He was obsessed with Pennywise at the same time. So he was going through something strange. But I know that kids love Five Nights at Freddy's.
Well, Five Nights at Freddy's for me is an interesting one that I don't remember who I talked about it with, but I think it is a hard genre to do. And that genre, children's horror.
Yeah, I think it's a great genre as well.
I think it's a fantastic genre.
It's something I really appreciate.
It's hard to do. It's hard to figure out where that line is for when it's too much for children, but, you know, not enough for horror, right?
Yes.
Like you want to get to that sweet spot. I think movies like Coraline and The Nightmare Before Christmas even.
Great. I would say for me, the big one, Jumanji is it.
Jumanji
is huge, the original.
Monster House.
Yeah.
A lot of
Around
these,
the Twist, the TV show.
Around the Twist,
that was
terrifying.
That's very powerful for me.
That was a scary ass show.
It's probably still like my favorite
but
piece
even,
of media.
What was it? Trapdoor,
yeah.
Yeah, like there's been a lot of children's horror, and I think it's done really well in claymation, stop motion animation, because there's kind of like something a little icky to that anyway.
Yes.
Tim Burton, icky guy.
Yeah.
Making
weird
icky
fella.
Movies. And yeah, like I think it's a very interesting genre, and it's, you know, now being done to death in video games. And it's, for me, it started with Five Nights at Freddy's, right? That being said, I've never played a Five Nights at Freddy's game ever. I have, however, watched an 8-hour lore video.
Oh my God,
on
8 hours.
Five Nights at Freddy's. You saying.
Is it just one game?
No.
Okay.
It's. Definitely under 10.
Okay,
or
so much.
At least 10.
Okay, I thought it was just one game.
No, Five Nights at Freddy's, Five Nights at Freddy's 2. There's one VR game, but I think another one's coming.
Wow, good Lord almighty.
And there's also there's a bunch. And they kind of have different kind of genres as well. It's an interesting, you know, concept, right? And, you know, why not go for, like, what if Chuck E. Cheese was
Yeah.
Like, I get it, right? It's clever. And so there was always going to be a movie of this. Always going to be. There's merchandise. There's a million games. There's all sorts of stuff for it. There's nephews drawing pictures for Christmas. It's a big deal. So, of course, there was going to be a movie.
Yeah.
How are they going to do it? Because Five Nights at Freddy's has the opposite problem of Mario, where there is so much lore. And not only is there so much lore, but there's heaps of fan theories. So not only is there canonical, you know, lore for this game series, there's also a million fan theories that fans want to become true and want to be canon. So if they're not canonized, it's like, oh, this movie sucks, right? I come from the perspective of never having played a Five Nights at Freddy's game in my life. I get scared.
Yeah.
But I've watched a lot of lore stuff, mainly to get to sleep or just to kind of like have a noise playing in the background.
Yeah.
So I've learned a bit, right? As a movie, meh.
Yeah.
As a movie about Five Nights at Freddy's, as a canonical piece of lore, of you know, content, whatever.
Okay.
The experience of seeing it at the movies, fantastic.
What's the difference between it being a good movie and the experience of seeing it?
I saw it in a very, very small cinema. Me with two of my friends and three other people in the cinema.
Yeah.
And the three people in the cinema who were there, one of them had seen it three times.
Oh my gosh.
And
wow.
We saw it very close to release, right? So it was pretty like intense, right? Like, whoa. But like they knew story beats. And like, so we had a little conversation before the movie.
Yeah.
And then because there's barely anyone there and these guys, they kind of care, but they don't. We could crack jokes. We could have fun.
Yeah.
We could be a little goofy to the screen because it was just kind of like, it was kind of like watching it at home with your friends.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, we kind of sat around having a chat with these guys about what was in it.
Yeah.
Fantastic experience.
Wow. Will you watch it again?
No.
Okay.
Probably. Oh, maybe. No.
Do you recommend it to someone like me who's never played the game?
I think everybody should see it.
Okay, wow. When it comes onto a streamer, I might chuck it on.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I don't think, once again, there were 6 months where I was watching nothing but bad movies. And so that has kind of taught me.
I try not to do that.
Not to discount, not to discount, you know, the experience of watching any movie. Because sometimes you can watch a really shit movie but still have heaps of fun with it.
Yeah.
Just from the experience of, you know, watching it with your friends, maybe goofing off.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay. All right.
I think
you
any
might have
movie
brought me around to it.
Any movie can be fun to watch.
I agree. Yeah, it brought me around to it. I will see Five Nights at Freddy's. Yeah,
and that's what I wanted by the end of this.
I'll agree to it.
The whole point of this podcast was to get you to agree to watch the Five Nights.
I'll watch it. And I'll watch it gladly and happily.
And that's the end of the show.
And I will give it a 5-star review.
And that's exactly what I want to hear.
Okay.
Alexi, thank you so much for joining me on the pod today.
Hey, my pleasure. It would be any time, dudes. Okay. Absolutely.
And you've got your own new podcast.
Yes.
Do you want to do a bit of a plug of what you got going on?
My God, I would absolutely love to. It's a passion project of mine that finally has been put out into the world. I've been making this podcast called Sunburnt Screens, the Australian Cinema Odyssey. And it's basically an audio journey through Australian film. I'm so passionate about Australian film. I really want to share it with people and help people discover things and find filmmakers that they love. And this series is basically me going through that journey, and each episode is like a different topic. Where the first couple are about like modern new wave Australian horror, because I think we're in a really fascinating place in horror cinema right now in Australia. So I'm interviewing all these filmmakers that made these great movies, and I've got big interviews with Gillian Armstrong, Rolf Dahir, Brian Trenchard-Smith, who's like the great Ozploitation filmmaker. I've got a whole episode dedicated to his cinema, queer cinema, and heaps more stuff that I'm trying to like cook up. And it's out right now wherever you go podcasts, Sunburnt Screens, and there'll be some more cool episodes at the start of next year as well.
Hell yeah, I love to hear it.
And so I'm very proud of it, very proud of it.
Hell yeah. And so once again, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, dude. Literally anytime. I love you, dude. Anytime.
Oh, I love you too. And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Back Pocket over on Patreon. If you support us at the silver tier and above, you can get access to our bonus episodes. In this week's bonus episode, Alexi is pitching his very own video game movie, and I'm like a Shark Tank guy. Consider this. I'm a big time producer.
Oh my gosh. I wish I'd known all these years.
I'm big time producer. I got $1 trillion.
Okay,
I'm looking to get my next movie out there. So what you've given me is a pitch right now.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But I want to know more.
Okay.
And hey, if you really like what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. and on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, a la Twitter and Threads and whatever, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thanks so much for tuning in. And as Chris Pratt's Mario would say, bye.